It's a beautiful morning. I think I'll go outside for a while and just smile. Just to get some clean, fresh air for me.
No sense in staying inside
if the weather's fine.
Barcelona, you're listening to English Radio in the Morning here at Radio Canal Barcelona 106.9 FM. I'm Virgil. I'm glad to be back with you again as we have these hot summer days, but it's been an interesting kind of period. When we look at the world around us, you know, so much has been said in the news and social media, among friends, our co-workers, pretty much everywhere on the issue of immigration and addressing the problems of migrants into developed countries. Everybody's got an opinion, you know, based on what they've heard, what they've seen on the news, what they've been told by politicians. But very few people have really had firsthand experience with the subject. So today we're going to try to change that dialogue, because joining us is Osman Umar, president of the NASCO Foundation, and at the same time he is the coordinator for Africa for the Proactiva Open Arms Foundation here in Barcelona. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brigili.
Well, the thing is that is great is that Osman, obviously, he has firsthand experience because he has been a migrant himself. He has now become thoroughly involved in terms of the Barcelona culture and obviously the African culture, and he is going to be living testimony to what can happen and can be done. We'd like to talk with him right after this.
Lift him up
And that was Lift Him Up by Dr. Walt Whitman and the Soul Children of Chicago Choir. Now, apropos of lifting him up, many critics of, we'll say, illegal immigrants, which is a term I will leave in quotation marks, say that people should just lift themselves up by their own bootstraps. Well, there's something to be said for that, and I'd like our guest to talk a little bit about that. This was, again, Usman Umar. He arrived in Barcelona at the age of 17 with no money, unable to speak the language, but here he is today. So tell us how that came to be, Usman.
Thank you very much for this great opportunity for me to be able to expose my experience to the world and all the audience. Definitely, I think it's wonderful opportunity for me. So, as a matter of fact, for example, it's very easy to think, okay, right now Usman is here wearing his suit, a nice shirt, he's just feel like an European citizen, and he's okay. But the fact, the real history behind me is absolutely terrible. And to make a long story quite easy to understand, I was born in a very small village in Ghana, which has 100 inhabitants, more or less. Very poor family. My father was the black magician in my tribe, in the zone, in the area. Okay. So in Ghana, for example, we have 42 different tribes, meaning 42 different languages, 42 different cultures. And in Wala, which is my culture, when a woman dies during giving birth, they normally consider that a child is a witch.
Yeah.
So this child is supposed to be killed. That happens to my case. My mom died when I was during my birth.
Right.
But why am I alive? Why didn't they kill me if that was what the tradition, the culture is supposed to be done? The fact is that my dad was the black magician in the whole area. So everybody, he has a kind of respect. Everybody was expecting him to give orders for them to kill me. But I don't know what happened. My father never gave orders.
Well, obviously, he had the ability to make law.
Because, more or less, yeah.
Because, of his skills and powers, yeah. And nobody was going to cross him because of fear that he just might, put a little something out from them. So they're saying, whatever he chose. And then he probably said that, obviously, this is my son,
yeah.
So he's going to be special. And so he was right.
Yeah, anyway, and I would be very glad if I could have gone back and asked him why he didn't give orders for the others to call me. But unfortunately, he's dead, so I can't ask him these questions. But anyway, the fact is that I normally say that I feel like the most fortunate man in the world. This is one of the main reasons why I really feel this. Due to this fact, the fact that my father refused to give orders for the people to kill me, I was able to live until 9 years. At the age of 9, I used to manufacture my own toy cars.
Okay.
So I remember I was playing one day with my toy car, but I have to pull it with a rope. So I saw a flight fly in the sky. I couldn't understand why the flight was able to fly and my toy car cannot even move for only just 1 centimeter. I remember I took a stone on the floor, I threw it up, it falls over my head. I couldn't understand why the stone couldn't sustain on the sky. Meanwhile, the plane is sustaining. A lot of questions comes to my head. Unfortunately, a lot of things. I started asking a lot of questions. I started to understand the thing that the world doesn't end at the borders of my village. There is something over there. But the fact is that I thought that time I was told that the flight was manufactured by the white man.
Mm.
And only white men can fly and go in a flight. So I thought, who is that white man and why is he capable to do that? And I cannot do it. So I want to know who this white man is. I want to understand why he was able to do that. And to acknowledge this, I need to go to his country to know what he's doing. Anyway, that's how to summarize a long story. After all this, at the end of the day, I was sent to the nearby village to learn street and welding. I still have my doctorate degrees of welding. I don't know whether you can see that.
Yes, yes.
This is an expression.
Right.
At the age of 9.
You were welding at the age of 9.
Exactly.
Okay.
After then, I went to the second capital. From the second capital, I went to the capital town, which is Accra in Ghana. I was working in a seaport. I saw how big ships arrive the seaport with a lot of TVs. And I had the opportunity to see the television for the first time. And fortunately, it was a football match. You can imagine which teams were playing, effectively Barca.
Right.
So I started a lot of questions. I wanted to know who the white man is, and I didn't know anything about Europe. I thought, for me, I was told it's paradise. So I didn't have means to go to Europe, so I just decided to go to Libya after a lot of conversation with other people. So I started a journey at the age of 13. I left Ghana with the intention to go to Libya. Well, no, I left alone, and when I get to Agadez, which is the last city of Niger, there was where the Saharan Desert starts.
Right.
The mafia lied to us that with a small land cruiser, we could cross with only 3 days the Saharan Desert. I thought it was the best way to cross, so they lied to us. We was about 17 people per each 4x4 truck. I mean, it was horrible, definitely. And the worst thing is that after 5 hours driving, they stopped in the middle of the desert and told us we have to go up now. They have to go and fill the tanks with petrol and come for us. We was abandoned in the middle of the desert.
With your money?
They've gone away with our money. You pay before you start. With the mafia, before you start negotiating, you pay. That's the reality.
Now, are these Libyans that you had to deal with then?
They are not Libyans. They are Niger, from Niger.
Right.
Yeah. And I think they also call them Sahrawis or some kind of things like that. So people who lives in with little thing, they still lives in the desert, and I don't know how they manage to survive in this kind of situation. Anyway, to make a long story very short, we left 46 people after 21 good days walking without water. We had only 5 liters of water. Only 6 of us was able to survive after three good weeks. Everything. I mean, it was horrible, definitely. The reality is horrible. Anyway, I was one of these people who was able to survive. It's a miracle. Once in Libya, I found some job. After 4 or 5 years working in Libya, I was able to get us money. So my dream was to go to the paradise, which is Europe. So I went back to Tripoli, which is the capital. I was in Benghazi, so I went back to Tripoli. And from Tripoli, I was told in 45 minutes I'll be in paradise. Okay, it seems like a joke, but because we have access to education, we have access to information. That time, I didn't know how to locate Spain in a map. I didn't know what a map was. I was totally illiterate. So after 3 times repeating the same thing, I thought the mafia was right. So all the money I get at this 4 or 5 years working in Libya, I give them back to almost $1,800. I give them back to the mafia. They took us to cross from Tripoli. We went to Agadames. We crossed to Tunisia, Algeria, Morocco. We went to Western Sahara, we go to Mauritania. It took us, instead of 45 minutes, it took us 3 good months. You can just ask yourself,
But you got here.
The reality is horrible. You don't have enough time to give details on that. So once I was in the no man's land between Western Sahara and Mauritania, the mafia gave us wood materials. We manufactured the boat ourselves. Now, they've increased. They make better situation, into the communities, better situations, because now you don't have to manufacture the boat yourself because you have a lot of immigrants coming due to the Syrian crisis, a lot of refugees, etc. So they buy inflatable boats. So they don't manufacture them anymore. But in my time, 2004, 2005, we manufactured our own boats.
So they realized it was the business, so they needed to invest in the business to be able to get more people to take across.
Absolutely. So we made the first attempt. Musa, my best friend and I, myself, we took 2 different boats, more than 100 people per boat. Just at the beginning, the boat where Musa was sank, and none of them survived. All of them died. I remember we came back to the desert. We stayed for almost 1 month before the mafia get more materials, bring more people. We manufactured 2 different boats again. We make the second attempt. After 48 good hours, the other one sank in the middle of the sea. None of them survived. In my case, even without petrol, at the end of the trip, we came to an island called Fuerteventura. I don't know. Definitely, I still feel it difficult to understand how that happened. Because without petrol, I mean, definitely, the probability to die was 99.9%. I mean, and then after then, I was taken to the CA, which is a prison in an island. After a month, 3 days, I was told I'm less than 18 years, so the international law gave me the opportunity to stay in Spain. I was taken to a nearby city called I don't remember the particular name. I was taken to the south part of Spain,
right,
from the island, and from this island, southern part of Spain. I was asked which part of Spain did I want to stay. I didn't know anything about Spain, so the only thing I knew was Barca. So I told them I wanted to go to Barca. They said, "What do you mean by that? You mean a city? Which city? Which So they started laughing when they realized that I mean Barcelona. And that was on the 24th of February 2005. I was sent to Barcelona.
And that's where the new saga starts.
That's where everything started.
Well, we'd like to talk more with Usman right after this.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me, please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Oh, there have been times. But I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
That was one of my good friends from Chicago, Sam Cooke, with "A Change Is Gonna Come." Now, that's what we're really talking about here, is change. We're talking with Usman Umar, talking about how he made change in his life happen, and also the change that he is looking to further for young people in Ghana. But the thing that we need to look at, and we focused on today, if we look at the news reports, there is a article in several of the papers talking about the death of a woman and her child, you know, who died in the Mediterranean, and a third woman who was clinging literally to survival, and how Proactiva Open Arms, the group that Usman is working for, has been involved in terms of preventing some of those crises and how now they really stepped in to, I guess, help the family of the dead people, you know, repatriate the bodies back. Tell us a little bit about that, Osman. You mentioned it to us.
I think these are clear examples, which this kind of reality, it talks just by itself. The reality is that 48 hours later, the Libyan Coast Guard informed that they've just rescued people in that particular point where Proactive Open Arms, an NGO whom I work for, located this particular dead bodies. We can all imagine that what really happened is that when the Libyan Coast Guard rescued these people, they're taking them back to Libya, which is a hell. The same hell they were running out of.
They're being
the
taken
same
back.
Hell that Matteo Salvini says that is a safe country.
This is the Italian prime minister.
Exactly. Libya has no government, has no president. We have three different rebels who are claiming the owners of Libya. Whom are you negotiating with? Anyway, let's go to the point. So if these three women and a child refused to go back to the European ship, they prefer to die. It says a lot about what's really going on in Libya.
What it says, and we've had some guests on previously from Ghana and from Kenya who've talked about the atrocities and the flat-out corruptness of the Libyan government, and how almost the Libyan government is fostering what I would call the new slave trade in terms of really just putting people onto boats, sending them over there, getting the money in advance and being able to profit from that. You've got a situation where supposedly, you know, Libya is getting rich on oil, but it's not really going anywhere. You have countries like Italy supporting it. You know, the UK has been supposedly training the Libyan Coast Guard, but yet we still have these incidents happening, and we need someone like Proactiva that has come in and has said, you know, this is all a farce. This is all a farce.
Absolutely. I think the fact is that in Europe, for example, we really have a big problem that we are trying to just keep away our eyes from, but it's a very strong and important point we need to solve. We react now, or in the future, it will be too late. Immigration is something since the humanity started. 75% of immigration movement in Africa, people move inside the continent. Only 25% moves out.
That's true, because you have many Nigerians, you know, who move to South Africa, you know, for better jobs.
75% of the population of migration moves in the continent. Only 25% tries to go out.
And why is it? Obviously, you had a dream. You wanted to find that elusive white man out there who had the power of life and whatever. Yeah. Why do you think many people take that risk? Because they know the risk they face in many cases.
I promise you, as I said some couple of minutes ago, I was going to the paradise. And I was told from Tripoli to paradise, it would take me only 45 minutes.
Okay. So they're being sold a golden dream.
Exactly. What we really need to do is to give access to formation and information. That's why 2012, I created my own NGO called NASCO Feeding Minds. I prefer to feed the mind of the people than feeding their stomach.
True. Because you feed their minds, they can feed themselves.
Absolutely. You give them food for more than 100 years. Meanwhile, if you invite me for a lunch today, compare Ghana, a life experience, I think people live 56 years. A meal for only a day is absolutely nothing. Meanwhile, if you give me knowledge, you've given me food for more than 100 years. And that's why this project particularly started. Teaching, giving ICT products to schools so students can learn what's happening in the other world, other part of the world.
Well, I think it's important because you've given quite a few computers and you've set up schools, you've set up libraries for people. Now, part of that mission has to be more than just giving them the tool, but also it has to be able to show them how to use that tool.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. As I said, I arrived here 17 years, no family, illiterate, I didn't know how to read and write. And after 13 years, I've studied degree in chemistry. I studied 2 years in chemistry in the University of Barcelona. I just graduated from marketing, public relations and administration of companies. I just finished my master's degree in ESADE 3 weeks ago. And as I said, I'm also a bicycle mechanic. Up to the last 3 months. Now I just work as a coordinator of the Mission of Africa, and I've stopped repairing bicycles. But definitely, when I designed the proposal at the first time, I went to the Minister of Education in Ghana. Everybody says, well, fantastic. But when I said the first lab cost 12,000 euros, nobody take the responsibility to do that. At the end of the day, I have to take my own pocket money to buy the first 45 computers for the first school.
Yeah.
This means that, of course, I know there's a lot we can do. That's why we need to convince these political leaders that the solution is possible. The solution is to trust people like Proactive Open Arms who are really professionals. They know what they are doing.
Well, that's one part of the thing we face. I mean, in the United States, we hear that same thing. We hear it in France. We hear it in Germany, that immigration the efforts of people like yours are misguided because that the home countries should be addressing the problem and keeping the people there. How would you respond to that? I mean, how do you say to like Trump, you know, who wants to close the borders, or say to him, well, I know you can't really say anything. And I mean, I've said a lot that I really can't repeat here, but it's a case where, how do you deal with the ignorance of politics?
Mira, the fact is that excuses for doing nothing is hundreds of excuses for not doing anything, definitely. As I said, I had the best excuse that, okay, I proposed this project to the Minister of Education. He's responsible to do that. If he didn't do it, then I've done my part. So I will not do it. I could have just stayed away and not doing it. I could have just started criticizing him on Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. But each and every one of us is responsible for this world to become a better place.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We own the world. You are the president. You are the president. I am the president.
But see, what happens is that people have been told they don't have power anymore. People have been made to believe that they must look to leaders. And so we find, you know, false prophets. You know, we have, in the United States, we have political leaders at the local levels, you know, who will talk one thing and make people feel good, make them appeal to their fears. Same thing in Europe. We have people like Marie Le Pen, you know, who appeals to the fears of people out there. And so appealing to that fear robs you of the individual's power. They all of a sudden think, well, I can't do that.
Absolutely, Virgilio. You are really right, definitely. But I repeat, I believe and trust in the individual powers. We are the world. We can make these changes. The presidents, the political leaders are there because we vote them to be there.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't recognize them as leaders, they don't have any power. We recognize them as leaders, we vote them, and they are there. They're supposed to serve the country, they're supposed to serve us, not the opposite way. However, once politicians get up there, it seems like they are there for them, for their own strength.
Mm-hmm.
And all they do is because they think they do what they think, but they're supposed to do what the people want.
Absolutely.
Okay, Africa. African leaders are corrupt, like everywhere. We create the same system to maintain Africa poorer and poorer and poorer. Africa is the most richest continent.
Absolutely.
And the biggest continent in the world. America, Europe, Asia, if you just take the map, can fit in Africa.
Well, see, the thing is, you know, taking an illusion and kind of going back to my work in the civil rights movement in the States, too many African leaders have learned too well from the white man. We have become the new white man.
Totally. Yesterday, I listened to a TED talk about that.
Okay. In that, you know, we have oppressed our people. You know, and that's, you know, and so, all right, how do you begin to change that?
I still go to the same point. I mean, I don't want to be too into, but I really want to make it clear. When I started the idea to go to Europe for the first time, I was told in 45 minutes I'll be in Europe. I gave all my ends to the mafia. I came here illiterate. I didn't speak Spanish, no Catalan. I don't read and write. Now I just have my master's degree from one of the most important universities in Barcelona, right? Almost in Europe. I think it's the fourth best business universities in Europe. Now, it's not easy for someone to just come and tell me, give me all your money and 45 minutes you'll be in the United States.
No. You've learned better.
Education is the key. Nelson Mandela. Yesterday was Nelson Mandela's day.
Right.
Education is the strongest weapon to... to convert any society in the world. African leaders are the new colonial masters.
Mm-hmm.
No problem. It has a solution. I could have gone direct to attack the Minister of Education. I decided not to do that. I just go under it. I create opportunity to give access to formation and information to young people. They are going to vote tomorrow. They are going to throw away the illegal, new colonial leaders of Africa. I'm not going to do that. I'm alone, a single person, but I can do a lot. If only one immigrant who, 17 years boy, arrived in Barcelona 13 years ago, knows illiterate, is able to give education to 11,000 students.
Anything is possible.
It's just about to be convinced in what you really, your ideas and your intentions.
Well, you're listening to 106.9 FM, English Radio in the Morning here in Barcelona. We'll be back to talk more with our guest right after this.
Do you wanna do nothing with me?
And that was Do You Want to Do Nothing With Me with Lawrence. Now, we talked about things, your mission, we talked about your foundation. One of the things that kind of touched me was the mission statement of Proactiva. It says in part, we are where they need us, we are where lives are at risk.
Absolutely.
I mean, let's talk about that. I mean, you've talked about the fact of what you're trying to do in terms of education as a catalyst. How do you go about doing that? How do you find out where you're needed? And how do you determine, you know, who's at risk?
Okay. This, for me, I think it's very easy. Each and every one of us, for example, we know how we want our house to look like. Or we know better our house than any other person. So for me, as an African born in Africa, I really know absolutely what pushed me to pass through this to risk my life in these conditions. So I know absolutely very well what's happening, what are they thinking, the youngest down there. And definitely, after all this experience, I know how we can fight against it. That's why I've absolutely determined this, that the key is education, and I've started. Now we have more than 11,000 students down there, and of course, I know, as Proactive of Pinam says, since they've been working for 32 months, I think, since they started the NGO, and they've saved more than 59,000 people.
From the sea.
From the sea. All the same, due to statistics, I think from the International Organization for Migrants, IOM, I think it says that 14,000 people have lost their life in the Mediterranean Sea in this last 2 or 3 years, I think. Of course they need us. Somebody's, we need a professional, but with sense of human, not people, something like Libyans who are able to leave women and children, a child, 4 year child.
To die.
To die. We need people like Proactive of Pinam to continue their work there. As human, it's our responsibility.
Right.
Today is Syria. Today is Africa. Tomorrow, who knows?
Well, that's the whole thing. We started looking at it. You know, we look at crises that have occurred throughout the world. Back in the United States, when we had the Hurricane Katrina that came through and wasted New Orleans, we had people coming to help New Orleans from Mexico, from South America, from Europe, because it was the humanity that was needed. Yeah. It was a case where the U.S. government couldn't do what they should have been doing. And so the human people around the world stepped in. So that's why what, you know, you're doing, what, you know, Proactiva is doing, is the human thing to do.
Exactly, absolutely.
Now, first off, even before you just do that, you know, we need to know where we can get more information about both organizations. So I know you got the website, Proactiva, so tell us those places where we can find information.
Okay, if you need more information about what I've been doing since 6 years ago, you just can go to www.nascoict.org. That's the official website of the NGO I created.
That's nascoict.org.
Exactly. And if you want to know more about what I've been doing, you just can go to my personal website, which is www.usmanumar.com. And that's my personal website where you can find a lot of information about what I've been doing, the kind of conferences I've been giving, TED Talks I've given in some places, et cetera, et cetera. And how you can help us to continue doing what we are doing, because all this is happening because of the good people. And also, as a coordinator of the mission of Africa for Proactive Open Arms, you can just go to proactiveopenarms.org, a lot of information. And nowadays, if we are not Proactive, you know, I don't want to say famous, but all the newspapers,
they have the photos of your people in the water, you know, getting things, you know. And it's Proactiva, that's P-R-O, Activa, with an A, openarms.org. Now, one of the things that we say, obviously, you know, people need to send money to help you keep doing what you guys are doing, but it's more than just money. You need people out there who can even help.
Absolutely, absolutely. The fact is that, just imagine, there's one simple thing I always want to make clear. Do you know how much it costs to maintain the boat of Proactive Open Arms in the sea a day?
No.
6,000 euros. 6,000 euros a day.
One boat, one day.
with, I mean, all the necessities for the immigrant when they arrest, the water, I mean, 6,000 euros. No government's giving support to that. Only the individual people, when they see the kind of work and things is happening, they see people donate. Individual people maintain this boat in the sea every single day.
So I think the whole thing is that when you start looking at it, it goes back to your point of saying that, you know, we as individuals have the power
to make change,
to do it. You know, we can't say, well, it's government's responsibility. We have to say, all right, what can I do?
Exactly. Not what my country can do for me, but what can I do for my country?
Right.
In the big case, in the, what can I do for the world? Not what the world can do for me. That's my summarizing everything together. I think that's my opinion.
Well, I think it's a real one, but I think the whole thing in is it's a matter of reorienting people to their power to make them understand that, no, you are not powerless. Despite what the politicians say, despite what they would want you to believe, you know, trust in them, believe in them, you have to believe in yourself because you have the power. You have the power. So now we're seeing, you know, talking about that in politicians, unfortunately, you know, they are a reality. We're seeing more and more of a rise in political conservatism and nationalism. What kind of impact do you see that could have on your programs? And in terms of the things that you want to do?
Bueno, I mean, nationalism is something, it's not new. I mean,
no, it isn't.
Everywhere. I mean, since like this happens, and I mean, for me, I think it's, we have the risk that in terms, depend on which people you associate with. For example, people automatically just put a ticket on you that you belong to this part or the other, the right or the left side. And unfortunately, I think the core point, our mission is to save people and help others. We don't work on colors. I don't want to say I'm right or I'm black or I'm right or left. I just want to make the world a better place. And I try to invoke all the people, all the audience listening to us that please, let's just take this basic idea in mind that all we need is to help others. I don't think about colors. I don't think about the religious mean. I mean, when Proactive Opinion go to the sea, they don't ask the people, which color are you or which region are you before we take you out of the sea. We are talking about life in risk.
Mm-hmm.
Life in risk. So, however, in other side, we have this part that we can, nationalism sometimes affect us because they think we are Catalanists or something like that. But I think, of course, the founder of Proactive Opinion, Oscar Camps, is Catalan. Usman, I'm a Ghanaian, but I've been here for 13 years. I have some Catalan family who gave me the opportunity to be able to go to school, to do what I'm doing. And I speak not perfect Catalan, and I do my best. So, I mean, if you hate Catalans, and because I speak Catalan, you said my organization is Catalan, I mean, definitely you are really absolutely wrong, because all I need is to give opportunity and help other people save lives. So please, I'm just asking the audience to try to make this very clear. However, of course, I mean, I'm not 100%. Nobody's perfect in this world, you know?
No, no.
So,
as much as they would protest otherwise. Now, the thing is, you know, we look at, you talked about, you know, needing $6,000 a day to keep the boat from Proactiva out there for a day. What does it take to keep your schools going? I mean, you get, you know, you get computers, and you've had companies donate computers. See, what do you need, you know, to keep NASCO going?
Definitely, right, my main headache right now is to get to secure a number of associates, people, I mean partners.
Mm-hmm.
Donors, fixed donors.
Right.
So I can secure a less structure to maintain everything working down there. And this is talking about almost 4,500 euros a year at the moment. Okay. I have only 5 schools and 1 library.
Okay.
I just shipped a container last 2 weeks to land in Ghana in, I think, the 30th year. I'll be flying there to be able to create more schools with the help of Proactive Opinion. And, of course, we'll be needing more support to be able to maintain this. However, we have some social companies. We have a beekeeping program, for example. We teach 24 women. We are trying to make a social cooperative social business for them. Mm-hmm. So this kind of project could be able to maintain themselves in the future. But of course, at the moment, we need this partnership to be able to maintain continuous partnership with donors to be able to structure to maintain this structure to be able to make it.
Well, I know there was a we had a friend on. He's a musician. He's from Ghana, but he came here and he began setting up a farming cooperative.
Ah, okay.
Where Ghanaian immigrants who'd come, much like you, came here. He set up a partnership with the Ajundama, a school and a farm to teach them how to raise crops and then to sell the crops to the markets.
Okay.
And so it's become self-sustaining so that now immigrants coming here, you know, from other parts of Africa, they learn a trade. They learn how to raise food, crops. So, like, you know, with the beekeeping is another way of doing that. But the whole thing, you start thinking about how do you tap into, let's say, corporate supporters where a company will change over their computer systems every couple of years. How can you get those old computers down to Ghana to help?
Of course. I need need some support from a lot of companies. For example, the last partnership I had or computer I received was from a company called Honda, the Motors.
Honda.
We was giving about more than 180 computers, for example. One other company is called Grupo Robledo. They gave us a warehouse where you keep them. I mean, I had a lot of partnership with a lot of people, and definitely I think if someone who has a company and real to cooperate with NASCO, for example, or this particular mission of practicing arms and NASCO in Ghana in particular, not only in Ghana. We started in Ghana, but we're going to other parts of Africa. Senegal will be the next step, I think, at the moment. Okay. So if you have a company and you really want to collaborate with us, definitely you'll be more than welcome. If you have used computers that you don't use anymore, very glad.
You have a use for them.
We give them a second opportunity and, of course, make a good use of them.
Absolutely.
So,
well, we'll be back for some closing comments right after this. was Basha with Butterfly. You know, we've been talking with our guest here, and there's so many things. We could probably talk for a week about, you know, the state of everything. But I think we really come down to, you know, one key point that you've been emphasizing throughout. And it's one that isn't just relevant for people coming out of risk situations. It's a matter of becoming educated about understanding the power of the mind to be able to see the opportunity and to act upon it. And you know, we were just talking about how in the States, you know, 36% of the people only have passports, and only 62% of those actually use them. And it comes down to the fact of, you know, there's a lack of desire to become educated. So when you are facing, you know, the challenge now of, you know, how to educate folks, how to educate the rest of the world. I mean, you got a mission here that is going to be daunting, but yet the potential is going to be incredible.
Yeah, that's one of the main jobs, or one of the big, one of the most important things I think I'm doing, and it really makes me feel very useful with what I'm doing, because I give a lot of conferences. I talk a lot about life experiences in schools, universities. Just right from here, I'm going to a university to give a conference. And mainly, definitely, the point is that this desire for education. I'm not a hero, or I'm not an extra, anything extra. I'm a normal human being. The fact is that I never had access to education. So when I had the opportunity, I didn't take a very good use of it. Or at least I used all my effort to use it. I still remember when I learned the first time when I discovered how to mathematics, mm-hmm. how to add, divide, and the next day I was told we're going to learn multiplication. I couldn't sleep the whole night. I was so nervous I couldn't sleep. Tomorrow I was going to discover how to multiplicate. In the night, because I have to work during the mornings, I have to take a big bath salt, put a cold water in it, ice, I put it under the table, I take off my shoes, and I put my feet in that water. So I could stay the whole night studying.
Because you saw what you could actually gain by doing it. You had your eyes on the prize, as we say.
This is what is luck in the first world. You don't have the desire to study.
Absolutely.
We only go to school, we study this kind of degrees, careers, because our parents or people around us just give us, hey, you have to learn something, you have to get a degree, you have to do something. And they are there just because somebody have just asked them to do it, but not because they really desire it.
Right. Well, we've got a great message that you brought us today. We thank you for coming very, very much. We're going to have another great show next Thursday, and a surprise for many of you. We want to thank Osman Umar for being here, and be sure to go to his website for NASCO and become informed. Have a great day, Barcelona, and do something good.